Welcome back to Whose Crime Is It Anyway? I'm Lisa.
And I'm Shell.
And we're here to give you your weekly fix of true crime from the True North. So, side note, I was actually a victim of a crime last week.
What?
So, my Wayfair account got hacked.
Oh my god.
And they used my Visa that was on file to purchase $2,400 worth of shit.
That is so ridiculous.
I was pissed. So when I went into my email, I could see the order confirmation. And after they placed the order, though, they changed the shipping address and the email so that I couldn't log in to cancel the order.
Wow. They're smart. So how did they get your information?
I have no idea how they even got into the account, but I ended up spending like 3 hours on the phone with Visa that day, and they are still investigating my claim that it was fraud.
So they're not giving you back the money automatically?
No, not yet. So still have to wait for that.
Identity theft sucks.
I know. And then a friend of mine actually messaged me a couple days after because I had posted about it on my Instagram story. Just, hey, heads up, everyone, check your Visa statements. And she's like, no word of a lie. The next day, her husband's business account got hacked and they stole $35,000 worth.
Oh, my God.
And then they drained their line of credit. So, like, shit's going down.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What is happening?
Yeah, these people are on the fucking prowler right now. So, everybody, make sure you keep a close eye on your Visa.
Check your accounts.
Check your accounts.
Just make sure everything's in tip-top shape.
And from this day on, like, I will no longer ever save my credit card information on a website.
That's terrible. I'm sorry. That's such a shitty thing. I mean, at least it wasn't, like, $35,000.
Oh, God, I know.
But still, $2,500 is a good sum of money.
I'm a fucking working girl here. I mean, yeah, I'm sure I'll get it back, but still. This week's case was one that I hadn't come across before and was actually suggested to us by one of our listeners. She warned me that this would take me down a long rabbit hole, and holy was she right. This case had me digging for answers for days. And also, we do love hearing from you all, and we're always happy to chat, so feel free to drop us a DM or a tweet.
Yeah, we would love some listener suggestions.
Yeah.
It's fun to do cases that we don't know of, but are local to someone's area. Like the Diane Rowendowicz case.
Exactly, that was another suggestion.
This week's case takes place at a type of event that we can all call a distant memory, a music festival. What was supposed to be a weekend of dancing and fun, it came to a halt after a young girl was found brutally murdered on the festival grounds. The investigation had a great head start, until the plot twist, and then another plot twist. Not only is this a story of pointing fingers, but it will make us question the definition of scientific forensic analysis entirely. This is the case of Bridget Grenier. Take it away, girl.
It was June 23rd, 1990, in the small town of Rose Isle, Manitoba, a quaint farm town approximately an hour and a half southwest of Winnipeg. When I checked it out on Google Maps, all I could see was just green. Like, where is the town? So I had to really zoom in, and there it was.
It's that small.
Yeah, it was so small. This teeny tiny little community amongst never-ending grids of farmland and dirt roads, with like a few other small communities sprinkled in every few kilometers.
When you're driving, you could just see forever and ever.
Yeah,
and
like
ever.
It's very flat, no mountains. It's just all prairie land, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So other nearby communities like Carmen had around 3,000 people. And then there was Miami, which I also had no idea Canada had its own Miami.
Oh, me neither.
They had a population of 450. So like, we're talking really small.
Different than the Miami that we're used to.
Oh, way different. So school had just finished for the year, and there was a rock music festival that weekend to kick off the summer. It was called Woodstick Music Festival, and it was held at the Birch Area Ski Resort in a big field surrounded by a forested area that was used for mountain bikers in the summer. As one might assume, growing up in a small town, there probably wasn't a whole lot going on for the local youth in the area. And I know from my experience growing up in a smallish town, there was literally nowhere to go on the weekends. So we would just have beach parties and go sit and drink at the school park.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Same here.
Right? Exactly. And then the cops would show up and then we would just all take off running.
Disperse. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of the young teeny boppers from the area were super excited for a big weekend of dancing, rock and roll, and socializing.
Was this an all ages event?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I would be stoked.
Right? So approximately 1,000 people showed up to the festival on that first night, including 16-year-old Bridget Grenier. She had brown, shoulder-length hair, beautiful fair skin, and eyes that sparkled. She had just finished grade 11 and was voted to be student president for the upcoming school year. She was kind, inclusive, compassionate, and friendly to everyone. She came with a few friends, including her best friend, Marlis, and Marlis's boyfriend, Barry. The energy in the air was buzzing. People were walking around mingling, chilling on the grass, dancing near the main stage, and drinking around some bonfires. What I would give to be able to go to a music festival right now.
I miss music festivals so badly.
Right? Like, I could just see it in your face. You were like, oh, I want to be there.
I know. Do you remember Sasquatch?
Oh, the best.
Oh. That was so much fun.
It's just such a great way to make memories.
It like, is.
I've had some of my fondest memories from music festivals.
Same here. Yep. I miss them. And I don't know if we're ever going to have one again.
I know.
It's so sad.
Gone are the days.
Mm-hmm.
So during the evening, a guy named Kyle Unger and his friend John Beckett came up to say hi to Bridget as she was sitting with her friends on the grass. Kyle was 19 and knew Bridget from school, but they hadn't seen each other in a long time. They weren't from the same friend group as he was known to be a bit of a loner in the town and didn't have a lot of friends, but Bridget was always nice to him and made him feel welcome. The two of them caught up for about 20 minutes, and then Kyle and John left to go wander around the festival some more. A little later, Bridget was introduced to a boy by one of her friends. His name was Timothy Houlihan, and he was 17 years old, so 1 year older than her. He was from a nearby town and went to a different school than Bridget, so they'd never met before. The two of them seemed to really hit it off and ended up dancing and kissing as the bands performed from about 12 o'clock to 1:30 a.m. At that point, Marlis and Barry were ready to call it a night, so they went to go get Bridget. Bridget wasn't ready to leave and told them that she was going to stay behind with Timothy and would catch a ride home with someone.
I mean, I probably would do the same thing.
For sure.
This, like, older boy and having a great time.
We're dancing, having a great time. There's music. It's a fucking music festival, guys.
It's a music festival. Yeah, I totally get it.
Like, you're not far from home. Like,
and maybe, you know, as friends, just make sure she gets home okay, check in with her, that kind of thing.
So, as a nice friend he was, Barry gave her his Nike sweatshirt to stay warm. And then he and Marlis went home. Bridget never made it home that night. The next morning, her nude body was found laying in a creek in a wooded area right next to the festival grounds.
Oh, and oh no.
And jeez. This is just a trigger warning for everyone because the details of her body may be hard to hear.
Can skip ahead 30 seconds.
Bridget had been badly beaten and tortured that she was unrecognizable. Her head had been struck multiple times, her lips were swollen, and she had extensive bruising across her eyes and nose. There were also bite marks on her breasts and arm, and long sticks were inserted forcefully into her vagina and rectum. Her cause of death was strangulation.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
This 16-year-old girl at a music festival.
Yeah.
Who the fuck did she run into?
Right. And like, this is a small town community area. Like, that type of shit does not happen.
That is so savage. Makes me sick.
I know. Off the muddy shore of the creek, the investigators found her backpack with her identification. Her bloody jeans were covered in mud with the legs torn into. And remember, like, they're not on her body. She's nude.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They found her underwear were ripped, bloody socks, and her t-shirt and a Nike sweatshirt, which was the one that Barry gave her. It appeared as if her clothes were almost just torn right off of her body because her shoes were tossed in opposite directions. Like, everything was just kind of everywhere, like, thrown around. And along the shore, about 3 feet from her body, was a muddy area with footprints.
Could this have been drug related? It just seems like such a intense murder.
So violent.
Like, it's so violent. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're like animalistic. Like,
I know.
Bite marks.
Right.
Ripping her clothes off, beating her, strangling her. Like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, you're at a music festival. Like, whether it was someone who was really high on drugs.
Like, I was just thinking if someone's hallucinating.
Yeah.
But how did no one see this happen?
It was like off the side of the festival. Like, you would go down like into the forest and down a path and like down to the creek. So it's a little bit of a trek. So it's possible that there wasn't anyone around to hear anything.
So is Timothy their number one suspect at this point?
Well, they went to Marlis and they wanted to get the rundown of the night before just so that they could figure out who to go and question. So Marlis gave a list of all the people that Bridget spoke with, including Kyle Unger, John Beckett, and Timothy Houlihan.
Okay, so what were their alibis? Did they all leave together? Did they stay with Bridget? Were they with Bridget the whole time? Wondering what their story was.
Right. So the last sighting basically was that Timothy and Bridget were really kind of hitting it off on the dance floor. They were kissing.
Kissing, yeah. Making out. Yeah, having a good time.
Right. Well, let's go back to Kyle. Later on that previous evening, Kyle and John were hanging around a bonfire drinking with some people. Kyle told John that he had always kind of had a crush on Bridget and that he was hoping that maybe he had a chance with her that night. At around 1:30 a.m., he left to go to the washroom, and after a few minutes, he returned with LSD and told John that he had just seen Bridget, quote, going at it with some guy in the woods. Kyle was, of course, disappointed, but he told John that he still wanted to hook up with a girl, so he was going to also, quote, find some tail. So,
oh God.
At around 2 or 2:30 in the morning, Kyle wandered off by himself. John said that Kyle was gone for around 20 minutes, but others say that he didn't return to the bonfire until around 3:30 or 4 a.m. So that's either 20 minutes or up to an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's a longer time.
But everyone's drinking. And like, I don't know about you.
Time almost becomes irrelevant at that point.
It's obsolete when you're at a fucking music festival. Like, people are not paying attention to the time.
Was it Kyle who said that he took LSD or John took LSD?
Kyle.
So Kyle took LSD and then wandered around.
Yeah.
So his probably concept of time has been drastically altered as well.
His concept, but I don't think that John took the LSD.
That makes sense. So he might be saying like 20 minutes, 30 minutes goes by.
Right. And other people that were around the bonfire said it was longer.
Okay. Suspicious.
Okay. It's so hard to tell. Like,
yeah,
what was it really? So when he does return, though, he appears as his normal self, unaffected by anything, and bragged to John that he actually had sex with some girl. But John said that Kyle was known to make up stories, so he didn't really buy it. Kyle didn't look flushed. His appearance hadn't changed at all. It just was like he walked off and came back.
Maybe he had sex with a hallucination.
Oh, yeah, possibly.
If he's on LSD, like, who knows?
Fucking know. Whatever you're taking on LSD, yeah. So Kyle and John left the festival together between 4:30 and 5 a.m. by hitching a ride in someone's car.
Do we know Bridget's time of death?
They never provided a time of death.
Because it would be interesting with the timeline to know when her time of death is.
Right. Like, if he's coming back to this bonfire after 20 minutes versus 3:30, 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference.
And if they left at 5, was it after 5 or 5:30 in the morning?
That she died?
That she died? Or was it before?
I know. It was really hard to find details about that, actually. I couldn't figure that out. On the day of Bridget's funeral, John Beckett said that Kyle wanted to go back to the scene to take some police tape as a keepsake. John thought
Kyle.
That this was yeah, I know.
Easy there, buddy.
So John also thought that this was really weird, but he went along as they drove around the festival grounds to go and find this crime scene. Eventually, they did find it, based off of the coverage that they had seen from the news. But John didn't want to get out of the car, so Kyle walked down to the creek by himself. When he returned, he said it was super muddy, and he could see that the cops had taken footprint molds. And then he said it was super dumb of him to go down there because now his footprints were down there too.
Isn't that contaminating a crime scene by going yes. down there?
Yes.
What is he thinking?
I have no idea. Like, could he have purposely put himself back at the scene so that he could have a quote reason why his footprints were there just in case the cops went back to take more molds?
Perhaps. It sounds pretty suspicious to me.
Right. Or yeah. was it just some like really weird crush that he had and he wanted to take something for a memory of her?
Yeah, but why the crime scene tape?
That's not a fond memory.
Yeah, it's weird on all levels.
Totally.
So I'm wondering about Timothy. Where does he like come into play on this? Are they questioning him? Was he in the woods with Bridget? Like Kyle said that he was.
Well, according to Tim's friends, they didn't see him until around 4 a.m. and he wasn't with Bridget. But his appearance was much different than Kyle's. He was covered in mud.
Oh.
He had scratches on his face and his hands and had blood on his chin.
Oh, that is not a good look.
No. Knowing what we know
yeah.
does not look good. So to his friends, obviously, it looks like he had just been completely beaten up.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if his footprint fits the molds that the police took.
That's another thing. Footprints were never discussed.
What?
On anything that I could read about this case.
So they took these molds, but we don't know.
I have no idea.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
It's driving me insane.
I'm already down a rabbit hole.
Oh, here we go. Buckle up, everyone. So when he first came back, at first he sat down and his friends were wondering what the hell just happened to you, dude. And he just ignored them when they asked him what happened. He was sitting in silence.
Okay, so he's just not talking to them.
Yeah,
not
like he looks like he friends. Just got beat up. He sat down around the bonfire with his friends and he's just not talking.
Not giving an explanation as to what happened, where no. he was. Did no. you get into a fight with someone? What right. happened? Where's Bridget?
Excuse me.
Yeah, I have so many questions.
Well, eventually he started explaining what happened. And he said that he was with a girl in the bush and that she was really nice. He said afterwards that he got jumped by an unknown man in the bush, saying that he beat me up pretty good. After a little while, Tim got back to his normal self and then had a couple more beers with his friends. When Tim and his friends were leaving the festival, he started a fire in a barrel that was at the entrance of the festival. Like, I'm assuming it was a big garbage can.
He's just started a fire in a garbage can. What did he put in there?
Well, apparently him and one of his friends were burning something. I yeah. don't have any
what
idea.
What was it?
Right. What was it? Who was the friend's name? Does anybody know anything about what was burned in that barrel? No.
Evidence?
The answer
That's
what
I'm thinking.
No. In this freaking story, there are so many unanswered questions. So let's go through the forensic evidence. The first piece was a hair found on Bridget's sweatshirt, the one that Barry had lent her. That hair was linked back to Kyle, but it wasn't an exact match. The hair was tested using hair microscopy, which was where the questioned hair is compared to a known hair under a microscope. So they compared the hair found on the sweatshirt with head hair that Kyle provided, and they said it was more likely than not Kyle's. So,
but it's not
100%.
100% of a match.
Yeah, but it's a close match. And hair microscopy was considered an acceptable form of evidence before DNA forensics took over.
What year was this again?
1990.
So this is like right
when it
DNA.
Started.
Yeah, like right when DNA is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's all that they have on Kyle. And it's not looking great, but again.
It's not great to have like, a hair on, but was Kyle friends with Barry at all?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Because I was thinking if Barry was wearing the sweater before and then was chatting with Kyle or they were friends, hair could have been transferred.
But don't forget that he had seen her that night. Kyle sat down with Bridget on the grass with John, right, and they chatted for like 20 minutes. So it's right, very possible, like if you're close to somebody, that a hair, it can transfer.
But wait, when did Barry give Bridget his sweater?
At the end of the night.
So that was after she was hanging out with John and Kyle.
Touche.
So I don't think that a hair would have transferred onto the sweater at that point.
Touche.
So she would have had to have seen Kyle after Marlis and Barry left, after Barry gave her his sweater.
Also, what if, I mean, I know that in the 90s, I wore my hoodie and still do around my waist, and I tie it around my waist if I'm hot.
That's true.
It was the summertime, so she might not have needed it. So maybe she was wearing the hoodie on her hips, mm-hmm, and a hair that had come onto her pants from earlier that night transferred onto the hoodie.
That's so true. There are so many possibilities.
I know. The second piece of evidence was a hair found on Bridget's pants, and that was linked back to Timothy. And also, it was more likely than not his. So again, not 100%, but it was most likely Timothy's hair from the pants.
Okay.
The third piece of evidence was a pubic hair on her sock, which also matched Tim.
Oh. So they definitely got frisky.
Yes.
For sure.
So Timothy, not looking so good, bud.
Really isn't.
No.
What was his statement to police? Did he say that they had sex?
So because Timothy was 17, he was still a minor. So he had to have his parents present when he was interviewed. So the first official statement was taken on June 27th, which was 3 days after Bridget's death. So his story was that, yes, he did go off and have consensual sex with Bridget in the woods. When they were walking back from the wooded area, Bridget said that she had to go pee and asked him to wait for her. But after like 20 minutes, she hadn't returned, so he said that he went looking for her. He checked the bathrooms, but they were empty, so he went back to the woods, and that's when he came across a patch of flattened grass with blood. So he continued walking further down the path, and that's when he slipped and fell in a patch of mud. But he didn't find her or anyone else. So as he walked back up from the woods behind the main stage, a man behind him said something. Timothy turned around, and right before he could get a good look at the guy, he was hit in the head, and he got knocked out. And that was the last thing he remembered.
He didn't remember going back to his friends?
Well, he didn't remember, like, who that person was that hit him.
Okay.
So he doesn't know his attacker.
And did this happen in the woods?
It happened right as he came out from the woods. He was, like, behind the stage.
And no one saw this. No one can corroborate this story.
No one can corroborate it.
So it still seems suspicious to me.
I know. And he's saying that he turned around, but he didn't get a good look, but he got a look. So he was able to somewhat describe this person to the cops. So the RCMP asked Tim if he knows anyone by the name of Kyle Unger. And he said, yes, I do. But that he didn't even see Kyle that night at the festival, and that it was not him who attacked him. So he's like saying, I have no idea why you're asking me if it's Kyle. It wasn't him. I didn't even see him that night.
I do wonder if the time that Kyle was missing from his friends lined up with the time that Timothy got punched in the face.
It's very possible. It's all within like this hour and a half.
Right.
Like 3:34.
It's a short window of time.
Yeah. But this could also be an alibi for Kyle, right? He's saying it wasn't him.
Right. Yeah.
But the RCMP had it in their minds that Kyle had something to do with the murder. But isn't it enough that Tim's confirming that it wasn't him who attacked him? Also, Tim said that it was an unknown man who hit him. And if Timothy and Kyle knew each other, now that he's saying that he knows a Kyle Unger, why would the RCMP just disregard that and still say, oh, well, we think it was Kyle still?
Maybe they're thinking that Tim is an unreliable witness. Maybe he was confused, didn't know that it was Kyle, got hit too hard or too quickly to even register that it's someone that he knew.
Maybe. Or do they think that the two of them were in on it together?
Oh, damn. I didn't even think of that.
Damn. But there was still one piece of evidence that hadn't come back yet. 2 days after Tim's statement, results came back from blood that was tested from Tim's shoe, and it came back as a match to Bridget's blood.
From Tim's shoe?
Yeah, Bridget's blood was on Tim's shoe, so that was enough to make an arrest.
That's definitely enough. Yeah,
we're bringing you in.
Yep.
Upon bringing Tim to the station, he was asked to provide a bite impression, but he refused.
Why?
I have no idea. If you've got nothing to hide, like, why are you refusing?
Yeah. Come on. Give your bite mark.
Right. Like, he was refusing to provide that, but he was feeling particularly chatty. So he now had a different story of what happened that night.
Oh, my God.
So now he's changing it. In his second story, he says that Kyle murdered Bridget.
Kyle murdered Bridget.
Like, how the hell do we go from saying, oh, I didn't even see Kyle that night, to now saying he was the one who murdered Bridget?
Maybe this is laddering up to the police's theory that they could be in on it together.
Right.
And because Timothy's being brought in and being arrested, he's like, okay, I'm going to throw it back onto Kyle now.
Right. Not me. Yeah, it was all him. So Timothy details the murder and it matches the evidence that the police have.
Does it match some evidence that was unreleased to the public?
I have no idea. I'm assuming there were apparently details that I think weren't known.
So then he's involved somehow.
Somehow.
If he knows this, he's got to be involved.
Okay, but how about this? Maybe the cops fucked up in his first interview with Tim by mentioning Kyle's name. That gave it away. Like, maybe he was like, oh shit, like, they've got another guy on their list. Like, what a perfect opportunity to pin the whole thing on this other dude I didn't even see. But all right, they're clearly onto him, so I'm going to say it was him.
And just throw the investigation for a loop.
Mm-hmm. And again, we have another trigger warning. Tim said that right after having sex with Bridget, somebody came up and punched her. And this is Tim's statement to the police. I didn't recognize him at first, and I asked him what he thought he was doing. He then turned to me, pushed me down, and then kicked me. I noticed it was Kyle Unger. He grabbed Bridget. He was fighting with her and fought her to the bottom of the hill. I followed to see if I could help her or see what he was doing. Kyle said to her, "So you don't like me?" And then he started to choke her. I pushed him off of her. Then he got up and pushed me down and started kicking and punching me. And then he told me to shut up and stay out of it. He started choking her again. He ripped her clothes off, continued to strangle her, and hit her in the face. I yelled a couple of times, but he told me to shut up or else something might happen. He just kept going and going and going, hitting her and hitting her and hitting her. And then he'd stop. Then he'd pick up a stick and start hitting her over the head, the face, and the body. She wasn't moving at the time, and she hadn't been moving since he first dragged her down there and started choking her. After that, I never saw her move again. I got up, tried to run away, but tripped. I fell, and he pulled the boots to me and dragged me back. He told me to settle down or else. He ordered me to come over and punch her a couple of times. I was afraid of him, and I'd seen what he had actually done to her, so I was afraid of what he would do to me. I went down and hit her twice. I backed away, and he went back to punching her and kicking her. He ordered me to come over and help him carry her down to the water and then carry or drag her in. We ended up going down there, and we put the body in the river. He told me not to say anything or else he'd come and find me and that he'd beat me up. Then a little while later, I woke up. I was somewhere else. I woke up and then I had mud and blood all over me. I went out to the bonfire and that's where everybody else was.
Okay. This is a big statement.
Huge statement.
Huge statement. So he's basically describing the murder, but we don't know if he's describing it in the way that he's telling it, like another person did it.
Right.
Or if he's describing it that he did it.
The way he did it.
Yes.
I know.
So that's very confusing.
Like, a little while later, what do you mean you just woke up? Are you trying to say that he knocked you out after that whole ordeal and that you just woke up and you were somewhere else? Like, that makes no sense.
Like, he blacked out and then woke up somewhere?
Yeah.
Seems weird.
And, like, he realized he had mud and blood all over him.
There's a lot of holes in this statement.
I know.
I don't like it at all.
Exactly.
I'm also not convinced that it was Kyle.
Not particularly.
At like, this point, I'm not convinced. I don't like that Kyle went back to the scene and tried to get a memento. That doesn't sit well with me.
That's weird.
But wouldn't there be more evidence of Kyle on Bridget if he was the one committing that crime? Not just one hair.
I know. I tried to look up if there was other evidence. Like, what about under her fingernails?
Mm-hmm.
I could not find it.
And there was no blood on Kyle at all.
Kyle was clean.
And Kyle's blood wasn't on her either.
No. Kyle looked untouched.
And remember, Timothy was seen burning something.
Exactly.
What was he burning?
The fuck was he burning?
I can't make up my mind right now.
I know. Was it the weapon?
So confusing.
I know. So when the cops asked Tim why he didn't say this in his original statement, Tim said, "Because I was afraid. I didn't want to finger Kyle then. And also, I was afraid I would get into trouble with the police because of, like, my shoes and mud and stuff all over my clothing and everything. I felt scared and terrified." But why should they believe Tim now? Maybe Timothy did do it, and that's why he knows all the details of the crime.
Exactly. That's what I would be wondering.
Yeah. It's putting him at the scene of the crime. Like, he's giving the details. So now you're saying that you were there regardless. No matter what. Like, you're saying that you saw her die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the police arrested Kyle, he provided a bite impression without hesitation. In fact, he was extremely cooperative with the police and provided everything that they had asked.
Oh, interesting. And did the bite marks match up?
No.
Oh, okay.
We will get there as well.
Huh.
Kyle and Tim were both arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Because Tim was under the age of 18, he was protected under the Young Offenders Act and was released and sent home to await his trial. His name was also protected, so the small communities of Rose Isle, Carmen, and Miami had no idea that Tim was a suspect in Bridget's murder. Kyle, however, was 19, so he was held in custody, and the whole region knew about it. The community was traumatized from her murder and hated Kyle openly.
Oh, and if he didn't do it, I mean, that's so hard.
I know.
That's really tough.
Before Kyle was arrested, he was known in their small community for having a violent temper and for being a troublemaker at school. He had been expelled from his high school, where Bridget also attended, for threatening two of his teachers and had a history with the law.
Okay.
Not looking good.
Not looking great, but that doesn't a murderer make.
I know, but
still
having a violent history and a temper is not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle's preliminary hearing was on December 11th, 1990, and it resulted in a stay of proceedings due to the lack of evidence against Kyle. All they had was that one hair that was most likely his. So they decided
but
to wait.
But still not 100%.
It's not enough.
So as a jury, I just wouldn't even know what to do with that.
Right. You can't build a case on that.
You can't convict someone because of a hair.
Right. So they decided to wait until more evidence was found. But because they had more compelling evidence against Tim, like the blood on his shoe, he was still awaiting his trial, but he was on bail, so he wasn't in jail for this.
Mm-hmm.
The RCMP interviewed over 20 inmates from when Kyle was in custody before the preliminary hearing to see if he had confessed to anyone. Five inmates spilled the tea.
Oh, but what did they say?
Well, four of them provided the most bogus, unrealistic stories. So right away, the RCMP just dismissed them as bullshit.
Fair, yeah.
But one inmate, he had a bit more of a compelling story to tell.
Hmm.
His name was Jeffrey Cohen. He testified that after this day of proceedings, Kyle said to him, "I killed her and I got away with it."
Whoa.
But here's the thing. His defense clarifies that Kyle never went back to jail after the stay of proceedings.
Oh.
Because he was released that day, so he wouldn't have even spoken with any inmates after that.
Okay, so then this guy was lying.
Exactly. He later admitted that it was a full-blown lie.
Oh my god.
So fuck you, Jeffrey.
Yeah, come on.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, like, jailhouse informants, everyone.
God.
Unreliable.
I know. The RCMP were not giving up. They were hell-bent on proving that Kyle was involved with the murder. So their next step, our good old Mr. Big sting operation.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go
Canada
again.
Canada loves their Mr. Big operations.
If you aren't familiar with this Canadian technique, it's an elaborate operation where an undercover cop pretends to be running a criminal organization. He befriends the prime suspect over an extended period of time, paying them to actually participate in fake crimes like delivering goods, smuggling guns, and credit card scams. And this is all just to gain their trust, so that once they think they've got it, they invite this suspect to be a part of the organization permanently.
And they're recording everything.
Yeah, everything's recorded.
It's kind of like coercing them to say... to confess.
Exactly. Yeah, they want to coerce them into a confession.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that they can let this target or the suspect be part of this organization is if he shares his criminal history with them in hopes that they can get the confession, right? So they try to be really helpful and say like, oh, if you tell us, we can get rid of the evidence and we can just make it all go away. So the Mr. Big operation starts on June 13th. 1991, almost a year after Bridget's murder. Two undercover agents, Larry and Greg, faked their car breaking down where they knew Kyle would be. At the time, Kyle's reputation was extremely tarnished from the stayed charges against him, so it had been really difficult for him to get a job. He eventually found a job at a farm stay where he would work and live on the farm. After helping Larry and Greg with the car, he offered for them to stay at the farm if they needed to. So they agreed, of course, and it just went from there. So Kyle was asked multiple times, kind of right off the bat, about his history, and he denied being guilty of the murder at least three times, denying his involvement completely.
Just saying that he was arrested for it, but he did not commit the crime.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I've been arrested, but they tried to charge me, but I'm innocent. So he said that at least three times. But eventually, after only 9 days of hanging out with Larry and Greg, Kyle confesses. He says he drove home after the murder to change his clothes, and then he went back to the festival.
What?
So that's why he didn't have any mud on him.
And mm-hmm. John didn't recognize that he changed his clothes?
Apparently not.
That's surprising, because he was with him all night.
Exactly. So Kyle also mentioned something about a bridge at the festival site. And as soon as they had his confession, Kyle was just arrested, like, on the spot.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah. Done.
Yeah, the stay of proceedings was now over and there was going to be a trial. So Kyle's testimony. Kyle took the stand. He testified that he did not kill Bridget and that he wasn't even at the scene of the crime. He also testified that he had lied to Larry and Greg in the Mr. Big operation, saying, quote, "I hoped to receive employment, large amounts of money, and acceptance into their group." He had gone along with the story just because he didn't want to ruin his chances at a job. And there were actually errors in the details that he provided in his confession to Larry and Greg. He said that he had a car and drove home from the festival, which wasn't true. They had hitchhiked to the festival that night.
Oh.
Like, would he have had enough time to make his way home and back to the festival without his own car? Like, how would he have managed that?
And like I said, I feel like John would have recognized if he went home and changed.
For sure.
I feel like he would have been like, dude, why are you wearing different clothes?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And there was also another error. Kyle mentioned that bridge at the concert site, but that hadn't actually been built until several months after Bridget's death.
The bridge.
The bridge.
Okay, so that also doesn't make sense.
Exactly. So it's, I don't know where he's coming up with this. So let's go to Tim's testimony. Tim maintained his second story, that he had consensual sex with Bridget and that Kyle came up and committed the murder. Honestly though, how are we supposed to believe that Kyle was able to beat him up and scare him so much that Tim would just stand by and watch as he beat and murdered a young girl who he had just been spending hours with that night?
It just seems so ridiculous. And I would like to know, is Kyle that much bigger than Tim? What's their size and stature like? Because if, you know, if Tim is like a shorter, smaller built guy, then maybe I can see it. And Kyle's like this big imposing dude. I can see that that might be intimidating. You know, you've been like roughed up a little bit and then this murder's happening in front of you. It can be really scary. But if they're about the same size, why wasn't Timothy fighting him off, taking him off of Bridget?
Being exactly. Like, adrenaline would have kicked in by then. Like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? 100%. You would think that Tim would have like respected and liked Bridget by now. Like, they've been hanging out all evening.
Also, leaving a witness to a murder seems ridiculous. Leaving Tim there as a witness, he's just murdered one person. Why isn't he murdering Tim?
Exactly.
It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense why you would leave a living witness to go and implicate you.
And Tim didn't even say, I was afraid he would kill me too. He said, oh, he would come and beat me up. He would come and find me and beat me up. Ooh, scary. You just watched him kill somebody and you don't think that he's going to come kill you now?
It just doesn't make sense to me, because if Kyle and Tim knew each other, Kyle would have seen Tim and been like, oh shit, this is someone I know finding me mid-assault with this girl. Immediately, I just feel like as a 19-year-old kid, he would be like, okay, not the right time to do this.
Right. And just back
Someone
off.
Can identify me. This guy is here looking for her. I'm going to back off. I don't think that the assault would have continued. Like, it just seems so far-fetched.
I know.
I'm feeling more and more in line with Tim did this.
Oh,
and that's what I thought from the beginning. I was like, is Tim their prime suspect? Like, this was the last guy with her. She didn't know him.
Exactly.
She at least knew Kyle and John.
Yes, she knew them from school.
I still don't like that Kyle went to the crime scene.
It's fucking weird, man.
It's very weird and not a great look. No. But, the evidence isn't adding up for me right now.
So when they went to court, the Crown's angle was that they believed that Tim and Bridget went into the forest to fool around. But when his advances to go further were rejected from Bridget, Tim got mad and he became violent and raped her. And that's when Kyle came upon him. And since he was all butthurt that Bridget didn't like him, he joined in and they both beat and murdered Bridget together.
Oh, wow. So they are keeping with the story that they
did it this together.
Wow. Okay.
So the verdict on February 28th, 1992, both Kyle and Tim were convicted for first-degree murder. But as you can expect, they both filed for an appeal. Kyle's defense argued that the Mr. Big operation shouldn't have been admissible in court. The problem with Mr. Big operations is that it's common for the target to falsely confess because they're trying to impress these guys. It was noted that Kyle actually lied to Larry and Greg about a lot of other things. He said that he was a truck driver, that he had gone to college, that he was engaged, he had been to every state, and that he had fished in Rio de Janeiro, making up these lavish lies to impress them. So if he was lying about all of that, who's to say that he wasn't lying about killing Bridget too? In fact, a lot of the details that he did share about the murder were actually wrong.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are misconceptions with Mr. Big operations. And we've seen it in the past, and that is why the states doesn't allow them.
Right.
So it doesn't always work. It did work with Gary Handlin in the Monica Jack case. But they didn't arrest him immediately after he confessed. They also got him to take the police
to the crime scene, spot
to where he murdered her.
Right.
And so it gave them extra evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, I just think maybe they jumped the gun in arresting him so quickly.
Like right away.
Yeah.
Kyle had been struggling to get by because his tarnished reputation prevented him from getting a decent paying job, and it also alienated him from having any friends. So being a part of this organization was really exciting for him. In his appeal, Kyle's defense lawyer brought up the bite marks. Forensic orthodontologist Dr. Norman Sperber, who specialized in bite impressions, had testified in the last trial that the bite marks found on Bridget's body did not belong to Kyle. And remember, Timothy refused to provide his bite impressions, so unable to compare his. And it also made it look like, you know, Tim had something to hide. Like, just give it up, dude.
Yeah. Kyle did. Why couldn't he?
Yeah. But that didn't matter to the court. They upheld Kyle's conviction, and he lost his appeal and was going to jail for 25 years.
Wow.
But Tim, he actually won his appeal.
Oh, God.
The one who has Bridget's blood on his shoe. So his defense stated that because Kyle's lawyer pointed the finger so much at Tim, it gave him an unfair trial, and that the two of them should have had their own separate trials.
I mean, I don't disagree with that.
No, it's true. It's like a little bit unbiased to the jury if you're constantly blaming this other defendant.
Yeah, and they're being tried together.
Yeah.
I think that Timothy should have had his own trial.
Probably. So they did grant it, and he was released on bail, and he was going to get a new trial. Only this time he was going to be tried as an adult because he was no longer protected under the Youth Offenders Act. But Tim never got to have his day in court. He committed suicide in 1994 while he was awaiting his trial.
Oh my God.
And his case was stayed.
Oh my God. Did he leave a note?
Nothing.
No note.
I mean, if there was a note, it wasn't related to the case.
He didn't confess anything.
Yeah, there was nothing mentioned of a note. So I'm assuming if there was one, it didn't have any relation to her.
Oh, wow.
So now we're left with even more unanswered questions. Now, Timothy is off the radar. He's no longer here. And
is Kyle still in jail?
Kyle's still in jail. As the years went by, the development of DNA forensics really took off. There were many cases that were being reopened and found to be wrongful convictions based off of hair microscopy evidence.
Yes.
A research team was formed in Winnipeg called the Forensic Evidence Review Committee, and they chose Kyle's case.
Yes. I think that's a good choice.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, the hair sample that was found on Bridget's sweatshirt was retested with DNA forensics, and the results showed that it was not Kyle's.
Whoa.
Yeah. So on November 4th, 2005, Kyle was granted bail after 14 years in prison while his case was being reviewed. He was officially acquitted on October 23rd, 2009, and was a free man at 38 years old.
Wow. Oh my gosh. If it wasn't Kyle's hair, whose was it?
We don't even know.
No!
They never tested it against him.
What?
And they also never tested it against Barry.
That's what I was going to say.
The original owner of the Nike sweatshirt.
I was thinking it could be Barry's.
It could be Barry's, or it could even be Marlis's.
Totally.
The girlfriend.
Totally.
Of Barry. So after Kyle's release, the Crown accused the RCMP of not disclosing all of the evidence in the case. They failed to disclose that people who knew Tim Houlihan suggested that he was possibly a Satanist.
A Satanist. Okay. Yeah. So then that makes sense why the murder was so grisly.
Yeah. And while they were quick to point out Kyle's minor little run-ins with the law, they failed to disclose that 3 years prior to Bridget's murder, Tim broke into a woman's home, stole her underwear, and ripped up her marriage certificate. And he would have been 15 years old when he did that.
Nope, 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 nope. That's like Russell Williams.
Hardcore. Yes. Oh,
yeah, no, I don't like that.
So let's just talk about bite impressions for a minute. I wanted to know how reliable this science is.
And well, think of Ted Bundy.
Oh, exactly.
That was a big thing in his case. Yeah.
Upon my research, I learned that it's not even a science. In 2015, a study was performed by the American Board of Forensics Odontology that asked certified members to analyze a set of different bite marks. They had to determine whether the marks were bite marks, if they were suggestive of bite marks, or if they weren't bite marks at all. The results were alarming. In almost every case, the participants couldn't decide if they were even looking at bite marks.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Freeman, who conducted the study, said, quote, "That was so horrifying. If experts can't agree on the answer to that initial question, is this or is this not a bite mark, that should trouble anybody." Bite marks aren't very reliable pieces of evidence because skin is a very poor medium for retaining bite marks. When the marks are analyzed, it's not an actual indentation of the teeth, it's the bruises left behind that are analyzed. There are variances in the skin's elasticity, which differs with age, race, body fat, and whether the person has underlying health issues like sickle cell anemia, which could cause the skin to bruise more easily, or diabetes, which causes bruises to stick around for a lot longer. Skin also releases tension depending on the way you move, so one person could bite two different people, and the marks might not even match at all.
Doesn't seem like it could be something that could be held up in court today.
Mm-hmm. There's so much variance.
Other than the bite marks, the hairs, and the pubic hair, and the blood that was Timothy's that was found on Bridget, was there any other evidence released that now with forensic DNA,
that we could test, go back and test
to see if it actually was Timothy who committed this crime?
Again, not that I'm aware of. This case drove me fucking crazy.
Oh, wow.
I spent so many hours trying to Google all these little side things, couldn't find anything. So in 2011, Kyle Unger filed a lawsuit for wrongful conviction, which finally settled in 2019. He was suing for $14 million.
Oh, go for it.
But I mean, the settlement amount is sealed and confidential, so we don't know what he actually got for it. The Grenier family, however, still strongly believes that Kyle is guilty.
Oh, wow.
So who murdered Bridget then? This is what pisses me off about the case. It became all about Tim and Kyle, which, yes, we need to figure out if they're guilty or not, but we still don't know who that second hair belongs to. They just left it unfinished. Tim legit had Bridget's blood on his shoes, and I don't know about you, but I don't bleed when I'm hooking up with someone.
No, right? Definitely not guys.
No. So if that hair was Tim's, it would prove that his DNA was the only DNA found at the scene and that there was at least no second person involved. But if it was from a second person, what about that friend who helped Tim burn something in that barrel? Who was he?
Who was he and what were they burning?
Right? Was his DNA taken? I doubt it.
This is such a confusing case, and I do feel bad that the Grenier family still believives it was Kyle.
I know.
I personally don't.
I don't.
I feel That's like it was Tim, too. And it is sad that he took his own life and that we don't have those answers, but he did describe the murder in detail, even though he was saying he watched it happen, like I said earlier. Was he describing it like he was watching it or that he was the one committing it?
Either way, he placed himself at the scene of the crime, and Kyle always denied that he was even at the scene at all.
And John testified, or his statement said that Kyle didn't look flushed, he didn't look out of control.
He wasn't ruffled up or anything.
But when Timothy's friends gave their statements, they said that he looked completely out of it, looked like he was beaten up or rolled around in the mud, had scratches blood on his chin,
face,
scratches on his face,
and his hands.
To me, the evidence kind of speaks for itself.
Well, if you think about it, when you're being strangled, the first thing you grab is their hands. So if he had, like he did have, scratches on his hands, that would indicate that those would have been defensive wounds from her trying to remove his hands from her neck.
Completely.
So Bridget and her family deserve the answers and closure. The only reason Tim's case was stayed was because he died. To me, personally, that shouldn't just disregard getting the answers for the family members who have to live with their loss every single day. Bridget died too, and we haven't seen the justice for that. So, was it Tim? Did he do it with the help of someone else? Or was it someone completely random? We may never know. So, we're still left wondering, whose crime is it anyway?
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of Whose Crime Is It Anyway? We'll be back next week with a brand new case. Until then, follow us on Instagram at Whose Crime Podcast and on Twitter at Whose Crime Pod. Bye!
Toodles!